Welcome. Mondays and Fridays with Brother Johnny, 7:30 to 8. We welcome Brother Johnny, who's in the center of the universe, Philo, Illinois, this morning.
Hey,
Mike Ditka, idyllic day in Naples, Florida. Couldn't be better down there, Mike, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good, guys.
Well, good to have both of you on. How's the golf game progressing, Mike?
My golf game is terrible, but I'm going to continue to play until I pass off the serve.
That's the kind of dedication that won him a Super Bowl ring or two. I love it. All right, I want to first talk about Jeremy Lin, the NBA player for the New York Knicks, the economics graduate from Harvard. Mike, you have a better chance to be president if you graduate from Harvard than playing the NBA. He's lighting it up.
Well, it's really a great story. I mean, when you look at everything about it, there's nothing wrong with this guy. I mean, he's a guy that's a humble guy. He works hard. He's smart. He's an Asian American. He's a Christian. You know, there's nothing the matter with this guy. I mean, and his teammates seem to love him. The fans have caught on. It's kind of a frenzy, and it's good to see that. Believe me, it's really good to see that. To see a new face walk onto the scene that people can appreciate for the way he handles himself on and off the court, and the way he plays the game.
Well, I'll tell you, Stevie, there have been 3 NBA players out of Harvard and 15 presidents. So, yes, he got 5 times better chance of being the president than playing for the Knicks.
Wait. I'll take an NBA player instead.
Hey, we have had a lot of Ivy League presidents, which may not be a good thing after all of this stuff. But anyway, Jeremy Lin is just maybe he's the NBA's version of Tim Tebow from the standpoint of unbelievable popularity. And hey, you know, they were 8-15 when he walked on the court as a starter, and they're now 15-15 hosting the Hornets tonight in New York, and the place is just going crazy. And I think
the Hornets, he may get another win there, because we're 4-23, and we traded Chris Paul for 3 or 4 guys, including E.J. Gordon. We remember him, who won't play because he's hurt. We got very little going on down there, so you could get another one.
Well, it's fun to watch. Great story with Jeremy Lin and the NBA and the New York Knickerbockers. All right. Gary Carter passes away, 57, brain tumor. He was the, of course, catcher for the Expos. He had the great 86 with the Mets. And always a shame to hear stories like that, Mike.
Well, it really is. You know, I happened to watch TV when it came across yesterday. It really shocked me. I mean, I didn't know he had been sick. And I remember what a good player he was to watch. I mean, he was a guy that kind of really didn't seek the limelight. He just played hard. He was there every day, and he was Mr. Clutch, and you know, he was a catcher. I mean, he epitomized all the good things about baseball, and it's a shame to see him go at this early age.
Yeah, great player for the Mets, and we do remember when he had that great, I think it was the Bill Buckner era against maybe the Red Sox, and Gary Carter was part of that Met experience in 86. All right, the budget to Washington. This budget, Johnny, the budget, as presented, 61% of it is locked up. We're only talking about 39% of the money because we've got entitlements, we got debt, service to debt. This thing, it doesn't look very good for our budget these years, Johnny.
Well, maybe we just cut that 39% because that's how much we're over what we've got. So, no, it doesn't. You know, we're committed to certain programs and you say locked in, but they just keep getting bigger and bigger. So the question is, how far do you go, and how long can you just keep handing the money over? I mean, something's going to give. We'll see. It'll probably be Europe where we see what happens with this kind of thing, Mike. I mean, Greece does seem to be having all kinds of trouble. They're trying to cut back. They're trying to get it to where
having riots in the streets now because they're cutting
back. Because they're trying to cut it back, and nobody wants to give up their part of it. They're fine with everyone else giving up whatever they need to. So that's what happens. Yeah. And you know, we're doing the same thing here. We're spending money we don't have. So how does that work out? Well, I don't know if we've ever done it before, so I don't know if we know.
Well, he has a great imagination that he's going to get this money by taxing the middle class and the upper class more money, and basically that's where they think they're going to get. But you can't justify the amount of spending we're doing with taxation, period. I mean, it won't cover. It just not covered.
No, I mean, it won't cover it. That's
control,
the problem.
You have to have some sensibility of what you're doing. And you got to get government out of every segment of everybody's life. They're in every segment of your life. It's like Big Brother. It's like the old George Orwell book. I think it was 1984. I read it in 1950s. But government takes over everything and becomes a part of your life. And it's not right. It's not what it's supposed to be.
Why don't you think that? Because I don't think people think there can be anarchy. I don't think they can conceptualize that when there is no money and your checks stop coming, then you're going to have some chaos, Johnny.
Well, they don't believe there can be no money. So nobody can believe that their little bit can make the difference. And I just don't think there's any real tangible appreciation of a problem. And that is the problem. So nobody wants to do anything about this. And we're not sure what will happen. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it'll all work out, Mike. They'll just kind of put money in your account, and you'll be fine.
Well,
if you go broke,
you saw how close anarchy was, Johnny, with one disaster with Katrina. You saw that the first time you viewed your home was with an army unit. I mean, the thing went south in a hurry because it was so much chaos.
There was chaos, and nobody, really nobody had any certainty what was going to happen to them, and so that they were kind of panicked, and there was no way to really control that. You kind of had to ring fence it off and hope for the best, but so we don't want that to happen, but I think you have to have some discipline. You have to have a plan. I mean, you just cannot keep doing what we're doing. In my mind, I don't think it'll work. And so
we have a plan in our government, John. It's for the Republicans to blame the Democrats and for the Democrats to blame the Republicans. That's our plan.
Yeah. Well,
Steve, I was thinking about a plan. I was telling the kids, we were talking about retirement and pensions and Social Security, and I told Matthew and his guys, your plan is the Dalai Lama plan, which is, if you remember Caddyshack, Bill Murray was the caddy in Caddyshack, and he caddied for the Dalai Lama. And after the match, Mike, the Dalai Lama starts, heading back to the parking lot, and Bill says, "Hey, Lama, how about a little something for the effort?" And the Dalai Lama says, "My child, there will be no money today, but on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness." And of course, that's the plan. And Bill, in the movie, he says, "So I got that going
for
me."
Yeah, I got that going for me. Yeah. I mean, well, that's what we've got.
Total consciousness on your deathbed. I think that's the plan. And of course, that's just facetious, but really, what is our plan? And where are we? What are we going to have? There will be no money today. So that's where we're headed.
And I don't know.
There's no concern about 20, 30 years down the line. There's only concern right now about 4 years from now.
Yeah.
We'll mention these people saying, "Well, we'll give you this. We'll take care of these people. They don't have to work." And get reelected again. And then finally, the worst thing is 8 years. It's 8 years. I mean, Dan, you got to put up with it. You got to live with it. And you hope whoever gets back in there, either this term or the following term, has some sense. For crying out loud.
Well, and just as an example, again, this is an encroachment on everything. As Mike said, governments get into everything. North Carolina, 4-year-old preschooler did not pass the food police. They looked in the lunch the mom had packed, which was turkey and cheese, determined it did not meet the food standard for schools, made her eat chicken nuggets and charged the parents. Now, a food police, it's actually a position where they make sure, because as they said, and I heard the quote, some parents just don't understand. They just don't know what healthy is, so we need to step in. This is continuing. It's just constant encroachment, and the more we accept, the more we get, I think.
Well, it's interesting.
You're exactly right.
The turkey and cheese, to me, sounds better than the chicken nuggets. So
you're right. But
you're just transferring the problem to somebody else to make a decision on something that could go either way. And that's why we're better off making our own decisions. It's not that the people wanted to hurt the kid. They think it's better for the
child. Right. They think they know better.
You know, when we were kids, what if you were an Italian family and you ate lasagna every night, or you were a Polish family and you ate the stuff, pierogies, or if you were an Irish family and you ate cabbage. I don't know. I mean, how it is to work out? I mean, my God, you can't eat what you want to eat. I mean, that's freedom of choice. You can do anything you want to do.
Then the problem, it starts to magnify when you start telling people, well, you can't have this, but we don't have enough for everyone to have this, so we'll all have gruel or grits or something. Nothing wrong with grits, but I'm just saying, you're lowering the bar, you're limiting the choices, and you're also frustrating most of us. So that's why we like our independence. It's pretty simple. It really is common sense, and it's a shame we see less and less of it.
Well, and I'm seeing, you know, as the election approaches, and I'm just not a Barack Obama fan. He's not a very good leader. He's not a very good president, period. Anybody but Barack at this point for me. But you see all the polling, it seems like he's over 50% approval. He's all these head-to-head balances. These incredibly contentious states are close, but they're going toward Barack right now. Too early on this, Johnny?
It's way too early. Are you kidding? We got 8 more months, and it can change every week. So I wouldn't pay any attention to it. And he might win. He might not. He's definitely going to be in a fight. And like Mike says, you know, he might get 4 more years. I'll be surprised because of the number of people who voted for him last time who have said they're not going to vote for him this time. That's the thing that would worry me the most if I was the president. And maybe he can get him back. Way too early to worry about. We don't even know who's Mike. We don't have a candidate running against him. We've got 3 guys running against each other, 3 or 4 running against each other. Nobody running against Obama.
Yeah.
So.
Now you're right, but they're starting a little bit of the rhetoric against the president. But you're right; it's too late. They're running against each other. I mean, the ads I saw an ad out there. It's just ridiculous. Some of these ads. They're crazy.
That's nuts to go after each other to that extent. I agree with that. It's not. I don't think it's really going to amount to much 8 months from now. But I think right now they're losing time. And of course, meanwhile, the opponent, because it is a race, the opponent's got time to build his strategy and to raise funds. And it's giving him a little bit of a recess against fighting off what he's going to have to fight off. But it'll get there. And I haven't been paying that much attention anymore. I've been watching Mickelson. He's still hitting the ball, Stevie. Yeah,
I tell you what, 5 under yesterday, Mike. Wow, Phil Mickelson's playing great golf right now. Holy mackerel.
Well, you know what? Every once in a while, the light comes on. That year, man, he could have a great year this year. I mean, if he just keeps it. The main thing, evidently, it looks like to me, you know, he's a pretty good short game guy. But it looks like he's keeping the ball in the fairway. Am I right?
I think so. And he plays on the short grass. Everybody's better, but particularly Phil. And we get those irons going. His short game looks tremendous. He looks terrific. Phil Mickelson. And I think he lost weight, if that has anything to do with things. But he definitely looks thinner to me this year. Maybe he's moving better. Maybe he's more flexible. But anyway, great to see Phil back out there. All right, 2 more items here I had to get to before we let you guys go. It's Brother Johnny, Mike Ditka. Mondays and Fridays, 7:30 to 8 on 93.5, 95.3, Connect FM. Voter registration, and Johnny, you've been saying this and talking about this for years and years and years. Well, the Pew Center released a study. The nation's voter registration rolls are in disarray. According to this report, 1 out of 8 active registrations is invalid or inaccurate. At the same time, 1 in 4 who are eligible to vote, at least 51 million potential voters, are not registered. The report found there are 1.8 million dead people listed as active voters, and 2.8 million people have active registrations in more than one state. So now we find out, Johnny, you've said this for years, that there's things messed up here.
Well, the voting is just a fiasco, and I think that there's just been little attention paid to that, particularly on the Republican side, because I've talked to guys and addressed the issue where in almost every close race, there seems to be votes found overnight or over a few days where the Democratic candidate would win just about every time. And that's just mathematically unlikely. But I think there's a lot of voter fraud, Steve, and in the United States. I've always wondered why Jimmy Carter would go to Haiti, Mike, to watch the voting there when we need him in Cincinnati, for crying out loud. But, no, it's tough. There's, 120 million people going to vote for president, so you're going to have some issues tracking it anyway. But it's a little scary with as close as these elections are, and as many times as you see a dead heat and you wonder, you know, where that's going to end up, and somebody has, like Al Franken's a good example. they had some votes in the trunk of a car a couple days after the election, and he's senator.
But how is that allowed? Why don't you storm in there and why? I mean, you can't find the fraud, or how does it work?
Well, every state's different, you know, and there's a lot of people around, and you know, most of the votes are quite valid. It's a matter of margin of victory. It's just like a good football or a basketball game. It comes down to a field goal, you know, and so maybe you can always dig out 1,000 votes somewhere. I don't know. Right. This has been going on for a long time. I mean, for decades in our country, and we do really pretty well. We still have a good system, but we're so close now that it's very tempting for one side or the other to try to nudge their candidate over. And I think, too, when you look at the numbers, you can, quote, deliver a certain percentage of votes in a high concentrated area, and boy, you see the opportunity to do it. And I think it's something that needs to be looked at very closely, Mike, because it's coming down to some very close races, and you have to try to get the best you can to get a fair election.
Well, what it really comes down to is incompetence here. You put the wrong people in the wrong positions, they can't do their job. And, you know, and it shouldn't be that hard. If somebody's dead, they're dead. You can't have them on a voter registration poll somewhere. You know, I mean, to me it makes no sense. But that would require somebody really working hard at the job to make sure it's right. People have too many things floated by, wow, it's okay. Well, it's not acceptable.
Well, I think you've got to just, I mean, there at this day and time, Steve, too, I think we can have voting machines that when you vote, it shows what time you cast the vote, just what time you cast the vote. So any votes cast after 8 o'clock when the polls close, or maybe it's 10 o'clock, maybe it's midnight.
Well, they objected to that.
But if it's cast after that, it shouldn't count.
They objected to that, didn't they?
Well, sure. They have. Well, you can't vote after the polls close if you have a machine telling you when you voted.
Yeah, right.
That's
exactly.
Not fair. Yeah. It's depriving one side or the other their right to cheat. But it's a pretty simple thing with our technology.
Right.
And
we can
really
do that.
I think we now, it's kind of a moot point with the early voting where you can vote for the whole month before the election. So I think it's just got to get worse, Mike. When you have a month to vote, I think there's all kinds of things you can do.
I don't understand. Why do we even do that? Why do we have early vote? I mean, the election is on a day. You need to go vote. That's it.
No, I agree with you, Steve. And why do we do it is because one reason we do that is to give more people a chance to vote. That's a theory. In reality, it's because Bush won 2 real close elections because they just couldn't get the votes cast overnight. So they need more time.
Yeah, I see.
And so now they've got a month.
All right. Let me touch on Bruce Weber because, this, you know, Bruce is our Illinois basketball coach, Mike. The team has lost 7 out of 8. The pressure is enormous. Bruce is very candid after another tough loss, and I agree with you, Mike, that a coach shouldn't be able to talk for an hour after a game to decompress, but he said some things, and it total frustration, and it just doesn't look very good for Bruce right now, barring a late-season run. It's tough in the big time when you're a coach. The pressure just gets ratcheted up, and with this 24/7 internet stuff, Mike, it just intensifies everything.
It really is. It's hard. I mean, you know, You never played a game to lose a game, and you know Illinois has a pretty good team. They had pretty good expectations. All of a sudden, you lose 7 in a row. I looked at the scores this morning. I saw Pitt got beat at home by West Virginia, 84-48.
Oh,
that's where I went to school. So you think you got a bad problem at Illinois? Hey, they got a pretty bad one at Pitt too.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, we've had some very close games, and we're struggling, but. I think Bruce has done a good job with the program, Steve. And, yeah, obviously there's things that he needs to work on because you want to win every game, but you're not going to.
I think a lot of it recruiting. If you can recruit and get me, I mean, to me, I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's just like schools that have a big advantage in recruiting, usually they have better teams. And, I mean, I'm just saying that. So, I mean, you got to look at the whole picture, you know, the academic program, what Illinois offers, and in my opinion, Illinois is one of the great universities in the country, and I don't know why it wouldn't be appealing to everybody.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one thing too, Steve, I have to point out respectfully that the University of Illinois did the wrong thing. We have a very, very esteemed tradition with Chief Alina Wick. He's a good mascot, and I thought he was treated with high reverence. And we decided when 5 or 10 people wanted to say they were offended to just dump our chief, and we did the wrong thing. Both of our high revenue sports are just in the tank. And we've lost our home field advantage at the Assembly Hall. And you can say the chief has nothing to do with it. I think it has a lot to do with it. I think there's
The Fighting Sioux back in South Dakota. You see that? Fighting
Sioux. Oh, well, they're standing up. Wait a minute. As we watch the teams and organizations stand up to what's right, which is, guys, we've analyzed your complaint. It has no validity. And we're not going to go with this. We're not insulting anyone. We're actually celebrating the Native American. And maybe there's some historic points to be made, but there's nothing wrong with the chief. And I think it's interesting, though. You know, you do the wrong thing, and things start going bad. That's just how it is. I mean, I changed the subject on you, Steve.
What Mike say when things go bad, they really go bad, don't they?
Hey, when you look at the tip-off against Purdue, this is Purdue, Mike. That's quite a rival we've had. I'm telling you, Steve, that half the seats were empty the other night at home. And we had a time when we couldn't be beaten in the Assembly Hall here.
Well, I tell you, it's one final note here. Mike, Johnny spoke in the U of I last night at Kechaturian Hall because of Johnny and named after our father, Narby. And he was tremendous, Mike. I mean, he was showing pictures of some of this innovation. And I've called Johnny the Thomas Edison of oil and gas. And then I started thinking, you know what? Thomas Edison couldn't do this stuff. What am I saying? Are you kidding me?
Exactly. I mean, what he's done is... You know, we'll never get the recognition that somebody like Edison got or Ford got, but it's every bit as important and every bit as significant. But, you know, hey, now it depends. Now, if he was a real liberal, he might get a little more recognition.
Well, I'll tell you something, Mike. I'm gonna stand up for Edison because I use light bulbs all the time. So I'm glad he came along.
Guys, we'll leave it there, but we'll be on with you Monday. Mike Ditka, Naples, hit him straight, buddy. And Johnny, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. God bless you both. It's Mike Ditka, Hall of Famer, Bear icon, Duck coach, and Brother Johnny on Mondays and Fridays, 7:30 to 8:00. Brought to you by Minetti's Restaurant, by Tim Mooney Ford in Tuscola, and by VersaBar. It's 757-93.5, 95.3.
This is the Wall Street Journal.